The Buck Sexton Show.
This podcast brought to you by My Patriot Supply. Did you miss the chance to get a 72-hour emergency food supply with free shipping for just $10? What's wrong with you? Don't worry. Call 888-411-7440 right now. They have a few left, and they're selling out fast. 888-411-7440. What are you waiting for? A disaster? Do it right now. 888-411-7440.
How to secure the homeland against the Islamic State. Certainly part of the war against ISIS. They say they're going to bring this war to our doorstep. And if we don't beat them, and if we don't manage to take this threat seriously, it's only a matter of time before they hit us. To help us talk about this now, we're joined by our friend Dan Bongino. He's a contributing editor at Conservative Review, and he's the author of The Fight, A Secret Service Agent's Inside Account of Security Failings and the Political Machine, which will be available January 12th. Dan Bongino, great to have you call in. Thanks for your time.
Always good to be here, Buck. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dan. So we know the threat level is elevated. We know the State Department has put out this sort of broad, somewhat vague global warning for all U.S. citizens traveling abroad anywhere. So we know there's an elevated threat. If I were to put you at the head of DHS and the FBI, Dan, all right, we're going to create a sort of special czar for domestic security for the purposes of our conversation here. What steps do we take now? What do we do to make sure we don't get hit at home by the Islamic State?
Well, here's one of the ironies about the current ongoing national dialogue, so to say, about surveillance. Everybody's focusing so heavily on the metadata argument, the ability of the NSA to accumulate phone records, not necessarily content, but duration and number dialed. And we've lost sight of, in my opinion, Buck, what the real argument should be and what the real dialogue should be about. And that's our actual old-fashioned physical surveillance capabilities. You know, during my time with the Secret Service working, one specific case that started as a financial crimes case and wound up spinning into a counterterror operation with a local FBI office, we were so limited in our physical surveillance capabilities because of the manpower required that just due to simple math, the time, you know, hours in the day, the chronology, there was no way to possibly surveil these people all the time. One of the growing, I think, the scandals you're going to hear about is how limited we are at the federal level to actually conduct surveillance. We've relied so heavily on heavily on the metadata component that we've lost the old-fashioned, so-called boots-on-the-ground approach.
So what do you think should be done about that?
Well, unfortunately, the guns and butter argument was lost a long time ago with the Obama administration. It's clearly been a butter approach, and that's it. I mean, we've pretty much gutted our military infrastructure, our federal law enforcement infrastructure, our intelligence infrastructure, although he'll argue otherwise. We all know that's the case. I mean, think about what's happening in New York, although not certainly a federal issue. The politics behind surveillance certainly apply on both, where the NYPD was prohibited from surveilling people in mosques. I mean,
I know all about that. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you work there. I mean, you and I both remember the NYPD.
They don't want us to pay close attention when somebody says, "Hey, I want to go. I'm going to go pray, and who can help me get an AK-47? Because I want to go shoot up a synagogue somewhere." That apparently that's unfair profiling, according to the critics of the NYPD. But anyway.
I mean, Buck, that's an absurd, you know, it's outrageous. I mean, think about it. If that was a Christian church or claiming to be Christian church, I mean, no real Christian would do that, but someone claiming to be Christian, frankly, like some of these people claim to be Muslim, and in the church they were openly advocating for the overthrow of the United States, you and I both know the Bureau would be in there tomorrow morning with the NYPD counterterror team, and it'd be people out there in those plastic handcuffs. I mean, that's just the way it works. This is only political because President Obama cannot seem to get past this infatuation with not calling out radical Islam what it is. And you know, he's in love with the straw man. And I'm frankly tired of the straw man. Listen, Buck, neither you nor I nor any other, you know, common sense American is saying every Muslim's involved in terrorism. That's absurd. That's ridiculous. It's stupid. You know, I'm Italian. They did this with the Italians back in the day where, oh, you're Italian? Well, you must be part of the mob. You know, you want to backhand someone when they say that. We don't do that in the United States. There are a couple idiots here and there, but overall we're a very accepting culture. But the fact that there are a group of terrorists who are openly invoking Islam doesn't mean that it has nothing to do with it either. And that's the problem ideologically this president has and why he's not serious about combating the threat.
Now, I think when we look at the soft underbelly of Europe when it comes to terrorism, there it's really twofold. On the one hand, it is disaffected recent immigrants or disaffected second-generation immigrants who come primarily from North Africa and parts of the Middle East who attack the French state, who attack French citizens or German citizens or wherever under the banner of jihad. But there's also, of course, this huge surge of migrants, which brings up in an immediate near-term sense the question of border security. Now, there have been some Syrians who we were told were just trying to become refugees who were picked up, I believe it was in Honduras, and they were on their way into the United States. We know they were going to try to come via the southern border. Do you think that right now it's likely that there are plots the Islamic State is considering or is even operational on where they would try to penetrate via the southern border? And can we do anything about that?
Of course, I've listened. That's a given. That very rarely in life is anything 100%. You ask 100 kids if they want homework, you know, one kid's always going to raise his hand and say yes. With 100% certainty, I can tell you that the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, AQAP, probably Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, you name the group, up and down the Maghreb, the Levant, whatever you choose to call it, there are groups saying to themselves right now, how do we slip people in as Syrian refugees to conduct small arms tactical assaults in the United States? Folks, that's 100% certain. Now, Buck, if you think this vetting process, which I know you don't, but if your listeners, I know you have listeners on the left, and that's great, appreciate you listening. But if you think this vetting process is thorough, let me ask you a very simple question, okay? The Secret Service goes to Nelson Mandela's funeral, right? Now, I was an agent. These guys did the best job they could possibly do. When you go overseas and you bring the president overseas, you are relying on the foreign government's database to vet people. End of story. You don't go over there and do a DMV check. It just doesn't work that way. You're relying on foreign intel. President Obama goes to Nelson Mandela's funeral. A guy stands behind him, a sign language interpreter, who had a criminal record and clearly had never been vetted. This was with the full resources of the United States Secret Service, the government, and the South African government at the most high-profile funeral the country's probably ever had. And the guy still got within a couple feet of the president. Are you laughingly, sadly, tragically telling me that that very same vetting process by foreign governments and us is going to weed out the Syrian terrorists trying to insert themselves into the refugee crowd? Give me a break, please. You know what? You almost want to slip an expletive in there to show you how much danger the people who are proposing this are putting us in right now.
Dan, what are you hearing from friends who are still on the inside at Secret Service? And I know you have friends at FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies. What are you hearing from them about their sense of this current threat stream right now against the United States coming from ISIS, coming from any jihadist entity, Al-Qaeda, you know, Jabhat al-Nusra, any of them? Are they particularly concerned? Because I know a lot of people out there are really concerned right now.
Well, one guy I talked to specifically, he's horrified at what's going on. He's a friend of mine. He was saying that when they go out and they interview anyone that has to do with Islam, the religion, that when they go out and interview people, there's like a ream of paperwork to do to make sure it's not some kind of a profiling case, no matter how hard the information is from the start. This is the kind of thing that sets a tone in an agency. You know, at some point, Buck, we have to trust our FBI agents that have sworn to protect that they're going to do the right thing, and if they don't, we have to set strict penalties. Listen, I'm a libertarian at heart. We don't want to give people unchecked powers. But we have to assume at some point that if we're hiring the best people and they're out there just randomly profiling Muslims, that there'll be a complaint process and those people will be terminated. You can't set up, though, this system where, forget about screaming fire in a movie theater. Before people go into movie theater, we're asking them if they're going to scream fire. In other words, we're doing this preemptive thing, putting the handcuffs on our intelligence agents and our law enforcement at home preemptively before they even go out to send a message that, hey, listen, you screw this up, and there's even an allegation here potentially of profiling on that end, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. The guys are terrified. You know, they're saying to themselves, listen, we're just getting these threats from sources, and we're going out where there's people looking over our shoulder at every opportunity. I mean, again, I'm a libertarian at heart. I'm not for unchecked power. But this administration has clearly sent the message from the top that this is some kind of a criminal poverty problem, terrorism, that needs to be understood rather than a problem of animalistic, hegemonic savages that want to kill us who need to be terminated. There's a big difference.
Dan, it sounds like you agree with me then, and I've been saying this here at The Blaze and also elsewhere, that the administration, you do get a real sense from this administration that they believe The greater threat, the greatest threat, is not of a mass casualty attack on the homeland at the hands of jihadists, whether it's ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or anyone else, but that essentially diversity will be a casualty of all this, that the backlash that, as you put it out, by the way, and I've said this before, too, the backlash that never comes, because that's not who we are, and none of us would support this backlash, and we would stop this backlash. But it seems like the administration thinks this imaginary backlash against the Muslim community in this country is really the biggest threat we face. And that's very unnerving for those of us who are worried about a subway getting blown up or a mall being shot up.
Right. I mean, we're parents, you know, we're brothers, we're sisters, we're fathers, mothers, grandparents. I don't want my kids in a shopping mall, you know, on Black Friday, looking down the business end of the barrel of a Kalashnikov, okay? This is not an irrational thing, Buck. It's happening. And the fact that the Obama administration, you know, views the genesis of terrorism overseas as the problem of a capitalistic income inequality system that's oppressed people, and this is somehow their natural, you know, they're emoting here through death and destruction, is nonsense. Some of these terrorists we saw from bin Laden, Zawahiri. These were educated people, many members of the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood, Buck. You know, bin Laden's family was one of the wealthiest in that region of the world. This is not a function of your income inequality pseudo-argument. It's a function of a perverse ideology that's taken a branch of a religion, which they've invoked, and have used it to brutally slay people in cold blood and torture them. If you don't understand that and you view this as some battle versus capitalism and the United States is the great imperialist, the fight will never be won because the fight will never start. It'll be a bunch of excuses as to why they're doing it. And you saw it with John Kerry, who unbelievably tried to use the word legitimate with the Charlie Hebdo attack. I mean, that wasn't a story in The Onion. He really said that. This is embarrassing.
Dan Bongino is a contributing editor at Conservative Review. He's the author of The Fight, A Secret Service Agent's Inside Account of Security Failings and the Political Machine, available January 12th. Is there a pre-order for that on Amazon, Dan?
Yes, sir, there is. We're doing really well on pre-orders. Thank you for mentioning that.
Excellent. Well, we'll make a fantastic digital stocking stuffer for anybody, I am sure. Dan Bongino, thank you so much, Dan. Great to talk to you. I appreciate your time.
Yes, sir, anytime. Thank you.
This podcast brought to you by My Patriot Supply. Did you miss the chance to get a 72-hour emergency food supply with free shipping for just $10? What's wrong with you? Don't worry. Call 888-411-7440 right now. They have a few left, and they're selling out fast. 888-411-7440. What are you waiting for? A disaster? Do it right now. 888-411-7440.